right, it is about that time, so I think we're all here and kind of get started on our next session.
In case we need some tape for something.
I guess. Yeah. Ah, this is always good. Yeah. They're probably not over my mouth, so we get going a little bit later up here with
it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe there's a reason why they've given me tape.
No. We won't explore that.
No.
I want to welcome everybody to our next session here on Doctor Who and Gender. Thank you. We'll help you with it. I'm Lynette Porter. I'm going to be the moderator of this session, and I think some of the other panels have started also, we're going to kind of go around and introduce ourselves here, then do a little bit of, our points of view, because this is a very large topic, and I know, like many of the other topics today, we could spend hours and hours talking just about one aspect. We'll try to cover a few of the highlights here, and then certainly open things up a little bit later to you, because I know you've got some questions. So why don't we go ahead and Tara, and start with you over here.
Hello, I'm Tara O'Shea. I'm co-editor of Chicks Dig Time Lords. I'm also a pop culture journalist. I used to be the TV editor at Media Sharks. And Doctor Who and gender is sort of a huge topic. I usually default to talking about women in Doctor Who because obviously with Chicks Dig Time Lords, that was a huge focus for me, both how women in fandom relate to the program and how women are portrayed on the program in the classic series and in the current series. And for me, it all, a lot of times, comes down to Barbara Wright is awesome and set the tone for everything that goes forward. And that the stereotype of the shrill, screaming companion is in fact a stereotype that is very rarely actually found on the show at any point. And I will admit that possibly my favorite companion of the Davies era was Donna, precisely because she was a throwback narratively to the relationships between the Doctor and the companions in the past, but that currently I'm crazy in love with Amy and Rory. And I also really embraced having more than one companion and having a male companion in the TARDIS.
I'm Kathy Sullivan. I write young adult fantasy and science fiction. I've got a couple short stories in some of the Big Finish-related anthologies from Big Finish. I'm in Chicks Dig Time Lords. I have a review in Outside In. And one of the main reasons I got addicted to Doctor Who was because one of my friends showed me Brain of Morbius, which had a matriarchal society. And Sarah Jane rescued the Doctor. So, yes. That's one of the things that got me in there. So I'm sure you want the rest of the panel. Before we go on further.
Yes, and then we'll come back, because you've already mentioned some things about companions, and all I know we'll want to get back into, so I know we'll have a lot of different topics to chat about. Scott, why don't you go ahead? It'll skip me for a minute.
Sure. My name is Scott Paith. I'm a professor here at DePaul University in religious studies, and I do a lot of work specifically in the field of ethics, applied ethics, and the relationship between issues of ethics and morality and religion.
My name is Sherry Ginn. I'm a psychologist, faculty member at a small little college in North Carolina. My interests are in gender representations in science fiction, television in particular, and I've written a book on that. But I've also written some articles on Torchwood and on Doctor Who, particularly Sarah Jane Smith. And then I've written a book on Joss Whedon's series. Where I talk a lot about gender in that as well.
Would you tell us the title of your book, though, the one, I like that, Sex is Out of This World, am I right?
The Sex is Out of This World, The Carnal Side of Science Fiction.
I love that title. You know, I have the worst writing of titles on all my books and things here with it, and I love that, and I thought it's so appropriate for this panel. I just wanted you to mention that. Thank you.
I'm Carol Barrowman. It's probably good that I come after the person who's already mentioned carnal and sex and any of those other great things. Because I, you know, one of my claim to fame that I like to say has the fact that I have been on the TARDIS and kissed the 10th Doctor and any other juicy details you want about that? I'm not sure how academic that is, but I'm happy to share. I am in real life an English professor at Alverno College in Milwaukee, and have this odd little brother who has been around space and time and done all sorts of carnal things, I'm sure. he and I have a writing relationship as well as our sibling relationship. We've written 5 books together. We're on our 6th. We've got a contract for 4 more. We've done a Torchwood novel. We did a comic together. Yeah, and I'm a girl, and I'm a chick who loves Time Lords. And did I mention I kissed one?
Had it been Eccleston, I'd be way more interested.
You know what? Some of you have been on panels with my other chicks before, and Eccleston did not give out kisses freely, which, you know, I have to say was too bad, because I wouldn't have minded, frankly.
The first time I ever watched Doctor Who and went, oh, this is fantastic. It's everything I loved about the original series, and I want to shag him blind.
Yeah.
That was my introduction to being attracted to the Doctor, was the Ninth Doctor, having grown up with Doctor Who.
I knew I picked the right panel. We've already talked about carnal shagging.
I know, we're like 5 minutes in. I know,
there's probably children in here. I should behave myself.
No, why?
Well, the Doctor was Flirty McFlirty Man, though. I mean, one of the things, I look at the Eccleston series as sort of a self-contained little world. Like, I am not a huge fan of the Tenth Doctor, even though I love Martha and Donna rather a lot. I was not a fan of actually that Doctor.
Right.
I was not a fan of genocide being on the list of things one can do to solve the problem. I was not a fan of the companion being there to stop him from hitting that big red button. But one of the things I really desperately loved about Eccleston is the Doctor was Flirty McFlirty Man, who flirted a lot and sent out all these mixed signals, and then would pretend ignorance when he would get called on it. But it was one of the first times that it was overt and not just subtext in the series, that there was that the Doctor had a sexuality and that it was alive and kicking. So that was really interesting to me as a viewer, that was differentiated the original series from the current series.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot here, and I want to kind of clarify, because gender is such a big issue. We've already talked about, kind of touched on a lot of different little topics here. Let me introduce myself really quickly here. I said I was Lynette Porter earlier. Like many of the people up here, I also am a professor, but I'm at an aeronautical university in Daytona Beach, Florida, Embry-Riddle. So I'm one of those strange people who can bring in Doctor Who in the classroom because I'm part of a humanities and social sciences department. And I don't think they quite know what we're doing over there in an aeronautical university, but my students literally are rocket scientists, so they are very much into science fiction, which is always very, very helpful. I have a book about Doctor Who that is out, the Doctor Who franchise, which I would be happy to talk with you about today, because I know we're not going to get into everything up here with it. But I also write about Sherlock. So if you like BBC television, I have a book about Benedict Cumberbatch that will be coming out in about 3 weeks. Ooh. So, yeah, so good things there. Unlike many of the people here, I have no claim to kissing any part of any doctor or companion. But I do tend to write about them a lot, you know. So I think in some ways, you know, we all have that kind of vicarious experience, and in that sense, I am right up there with you. Let me start out a little bit, kind of put things into kind of the context here. When I'd first talked with Paul Booth about doing a panel session, I had titled mine Sexuality, Sexiness, and Gender Roles in Post-2005 Doctor Who, and that is only a very, very small segment, so I know we're going to broaden that out today. But let me give you at least a little bit of a framework here. For me, it was very interesting that in a series designed with a family viewing audience in mind, and several panels have already talked about the children's series aspect of Doctor Who, that particularly since 2005, the Doctor and his companions have become surprisingly sexy. The Ninth Doctor gains greater humanity, so I was glad you're bringing up Eccleston already here, because of his budding love relationship with Rose Tyler. And we have to remember that during Christopher Eccleston's lone year as a Time Lord, we also get introduced then to Captain Jack, who is a very interesting character, in some ways brought on very romantically, very subversively. We find out he's omnisexual. It's very interesting that he becomes one of the people to kiss the Doctor. So before 9's regeneration into 10, that becomes a big moment in Doctor Who's sexuality. There's also been all the affectionate innuendo concerning Rose and the Doctor. And in fact, when the Doctor dances, he asks Rose, you know, with whom she thinks that Captain Jack would like to dance most. Would he be more interested in Rose or more interested in himself? And kind of leaves that question open for the next several episodes.
With the regenerations into 10 and 11, the Doctor becomes more overtly heterosexual. More female companions come on board the TARDIS, and they allow the Doctor, I think, to explore some different aspects of his personality. So for me, at least, I think 10 was a good choice to kiss, because I think he is the romantic Doctor for me. And in fact, one of my friends calls the whole Tennant era have Doctor Who for girls in a way, because there are some of these romantic relationships, but also deep friendships, like with Donna, for example, that are forged during this time period. With the shift from Russell T. Davies to Stephen Moffat as showrunner, and the regeneration from 10 to 11, we get a little bit more of a sexy Doctor as well. And in fact, Kathy and I were talking last night at dinner a little bit about how, at least on BBC America, we see in the promos more of a shirtless Doctor than we've ever seen before. He's falling out of the shower, he's disrobing, and that's a little bit more of a trend,
for
I think.
Pertwee.
That's true. That's the only one we see in the shower.
No, but that's very true. But not so much in BBC America promos, aimed at the U.S. here. So we do have that callback to earlier canon, but I think they're playing that up a little bit more. We have dialogues, such as the Doctor's comments in A Christmas Carol about a liaison possible marriage with Marilyn Monroe. And so we have different things here where the Doctor and other characters' sexual exploits are hinted at, although nothing salacious is shown on screen. We've got, for example, Moffat suggesting that the Doctor's feelings toward the newest companion, Clara Oswin Oswald, and I absolutely adore her, might create an interesting triangle among the Doctor and Clara and River Song, who will be coming back. And it was very interesting in a promo recently that Matt Smith had said that he kind of likes the idea of the Doctor being, you know, kind of torn between the TARDIS and Clara, as well as, you know, kind of setting up this possible little threesome here. Maybe it's not a threesome in the way that some of us would like to see, but I think there are some of these juxtapositions being shown up. Now, I do want to, though we've talking a lot about sex, which possibly isn't surprising at a Doctor Who conference, but I do want to differentiate that from gender, you know, which is often defined as one's degree of, and I hate to use air quotes, but I will here, maleness or femaleness. You know, I think that Doctor Who has increasingly played with our expectations of traditional gender roles. So I'm glad you love Rory and Amy here, because Rory, I think, is, again, one that maybe shouldn't mess with our gender expectations, but for part of the audience does, because Rory is the boy who waited, and he is a nurse instead of a doctor, and is generally more nurturing and caring and kind of follows along instead of being the adventuresome character that Amy is. So I think that they're trying to play with some gender issues or gender roles there as well. He's referred to as one of the pawns collectively instead of as his own entity here. So even though we have some traditional roles or non-traditional takes on them, I think that's part of where, you know, Doctor Who excels in kind of expanding or maybe playing on our preconceptions. Another one I want to mention just very quickly here is Cold War, episode a couple of weeks ago. How many people have already seen that? Good, I won't spoil you too terribly much. Why am I not surprised, right? I won't ask how you saw it or how early you saw it as well. But in that, you remember the Doctor's blonde Barbie is shown two times up here with it. It's like, what's in the Doctor's pockets as he is searched, you know? And so he's very happy when the Barbie is one of his prized possessions, along with the sonic screwdriver, that is returned to him. And when the Russian scientist, who is male, returns the Barbie, the Doctor is overjoyed and says, I could kiss you. And the guy says, yeah, okay, you know, he's up for that as well. But the Doctor kind of begins to background and says, well, you know, maybe later. If you look at the most recent Christmas special, The Snowman, you have the characters of Lady or Madame Vastra and Jenny, and they're quickly becoming some of my favorite characters, especially in some of the little, you know, mobisodes or minisodes, you want to call it here. Lady Vastra, known as the Lizard Woman from the Dawn of Time, is the great detective. So she is the Sherlock Holmes character, which allows me to combine a couple of my fandoms in a very nice way. But it's very interesting that, you know, particularly in the webisode, because she is green lizard-skinned, she is very much other from what the inspector expects. He has some questions about her role as the great detective and her work with Scotland Yard. But the biggest part of that little webisode is that she is married to Jenny. And so it's a big issue as that they are same sex, if not, or same gender, if not, same species spouses. And it's very interesting that she becomes the model for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes, which I guess the audience wasn't ready for that, so they turned it into a white British male as the protagonist for that series. So these are just some of the many things I think Doctor Who does well. Biology may determine gender, but Doctor Who doesn't, in my opinion, limit a character's possibilities based on gender. We see certainly a wide variety of sexualities. So for me, while debates about gender and sexual equality continue in our Western politics, whether we're talking UK, US, or anywhere else around the world here, Doctor Who portrays an alternate reality in which diversity certainly can be celebrated, but to me, it is accepted, and more importantly, it is expected to have that diversity. So that's kind of my framework on things. I think we've already kind of touched on a lot of areas here. And Tara, you are dying to say something to me here.
Well, there are two things. One, Doctor Who being a family program, it reflects the world around it. And I think it was very important with the new series to reflect the world that the world's eight-year-olds currently live in. And that includes same-sex partnerships. And that includes single-parent households, and that, and children are universally much more accepting of the actual reality we live in versus the reality that we are fed through our media. And I love that Doctor Who embraced that. I also really loved Captain Jack in Doctor Who because of the omnisexuality and the idea that if it's got a consciousness, I'm up for it. I think in Torchwood there was much more of a focus on the Jack and Yanto relationship to the exclusion of everything else, which I actually thought took away from Jack's character a bit. But one of the things that has made me, I admit, I am not a huge, huge fan of the Davies era after the first series, and I'm not a huge fan of the 10th Doctor. I was so ready to see the Lonely God and the hubris take a backseat, and we get our Scottish overlords. And I thought the 11th Doctor was extraordinary, but I don't look at the 11th Doctor as overtly sexualized as the 10th Doctor. I think that for all that he has a very romantic relationship with River, and there's a lot more snogging than there has been on the series as a whole, I think that the 11th Doctor is he's adorable, but he's not necessarily sexy to me. I admit, the only time literally I've ever seen the Doctor as sexy was Eccleston. But I love that with the 11th Doctor, it's finally made canon that, yes, Time Lords can change gender when they regenerate. I love that showed up in a script. I love that Moffat kept it, and that it's just a blip on the radar, that the universe did not implode, that fandom did not run screaming into the streets and set effigies on fire. That, in fact, you have to understand, coming from a background of going to Doctor Who conventions for 10 years and before that, this was an incredibly dividing issue. You had a lot of people who insisted that the character of the Doctor had an inherent maleness, that you could not be the Doctor and you could not be a Time Lord unless the Doctor were male. And for all that people would bring up the Curse of the Fatal Death, which is a parody that Moffat wrote years and years and years ago for Red Nose's special, where the Doctor does regenerate into a woman at the end, that was still a parody. That was still not canon. That was still something that was tweaking fandom's nose about it. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed with the Amy and Rory relationship is, as you said, the show flips a lot of stereotypical gender roles. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that a lot in television. We've seen it, I mean, in Galactica, certainly, if anyone saw the recent Battlestar Galactica reboot, Starbuck and Apollo, and also President Roslin and Captain Adama, they constantly played with gender roles. Roslin was the hardline, absolutely ruthless, in order to preserve the species, and Adama was the soft-hearted, compassionate one. Whereas with Amy and Rory, Rory is the steadfast one. He is, I wouldn't necessarily say a nurse instead of a doctor is a big thing, because nursing is a hugely respected profession, but it is,
for all that it is, people, I think, for watching
it is
there,
stereotypically
that is
seen
still,
as female.
Yeah.
That he was a nurse. He was a male nurse. but it was more important to me that for all that Amy threw herself at the Doctor because she was flipping out about her upcoming wedding, and the Doctor was like, no, I knew you was a child. Stop. This did not make Amy a terrible character, because it's about her relationship with Rory, and the fact that she realized early on that, yes, this is the person she's in love with, and he was her everything. He was the boy who waited. Mm-hmm. The way that relationship was portrayed, I really loved. I loved that we saw so many different sides of those two characters and how they worked as a partnership and how the three of them, the Doctor, Amy, and Rory, were this mad, dysfunctional family, but so close. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen the Doctor have that kind of familial relationship before. We know that he's a grandfather. We know that he's a parent. It's been mentioned since the very beginning, and anyone who brings up the, well, we don't know that Susan's really his granddaughter, will get throat punched. there is nothing in the actual text of the series to ever suggest for a minute that Susan is not his granddaughter, and that the Doctor didn't have a family. It's been repeated since the Second Doctor onward, and I love that. I love that River, you know, I was terribly upset that River didn't get the chance to actually be raised by her parents and become just as awesome as she is without being a pawn on a chessboard. I was very sad that Rory and Amy had the experience of becoming parents taken away from them. And I had, when that storyline was going on, I was hoping against hope that we would, because time can be rewritten, that River would be returned and allowed to grow up mm-hmm. herself, and that Rory and Amy would be allowed to raise her. But as it stands, I think that the way that relationship between Rory and the Doctor and Amy, it does play with gender a lot. And I love that Amy is so feminine. I mean, she's got the nails and she's got the shoes and she, mm-hmm. you know, she's completely comfortable with her sexuality. She's completely comfortable with her gender. She's comfortable with being girly and also comfortable with running around and shooting aliens and running through corridors and saving the world and saving the universe. And that these two things are not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times in modern feminism, there's such a militant, you can't be girly and still be respected as a woman, mm-hmm. That we judge female characters on how they look rather than who they are and what they do while they're dressed, however they're dressed, and respecting them for their actions and who they are, again, regardless of how they choose to present themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, the Moffat era has been really strong with incredible female characters like Liz the Tenth, and I love Liz Ten. I mean, Liz Ten is just my happy place. She's the queen. She rules. And Amy, and I love Clara. I love, again, that we see all these different sides of a character in different eras mm-hmm. so far, that we've seen her in the far-flung future, we've seen her in Victorian London, and now we're seeing her in modern London.
And I think, you know, too, when you have 50 years to go through, there are so many companions who can be role models at different times, and whether or not you want to think that is the role of the companion. I like that Moffat had said recently, I don't agree with him, but I like the statement that it's not the Doctor's story, but it's a story of the companion that we follow. We were in different panels earlier today, I've already mentioned about the entry point, that the companions are the entry point. So there are a couple of questions I want to ask you based on some of the things that you have brought up here. Let me open it up around the site here for a sec that, you know,
I have a few things to say.
It wasn't a huge divisiveness about the idea of a female doctor. Back in the wilderness years, we had fan videos, I think it was Rian Johnson, who had a female doctor. And that was a wonderful series. And it was really nice to postulate that the Doctor wouldn't be changed that much. Second of all, the nice thing about the classic series was that the Doctor's sexuality was not in your face. Now, it could be more of the television era, it could be more of the way they decided to portray it, but because there was always that, he was always kind of detached, that could be one of the reasons why the fan audience back at the time, we have a lot of gays who are very, very interested in the show because it wasn't like Captain Kirk, here's a new romance in the next week. A lot of the asexual people basically will like the Doctor because you could travel with him and he's not going to be interested in you.
Well, and being a hero isn't about getting the girl.
Finally. I mean, that was one of the first shows that actually said this is not, he's not getting the girl as a trophy for being the hero. It's basically, we're just having fun, we're saving the universe, and that's good. But also the nice thing about this show is that for every time we have a character like Polly being asked to make the tea, we have a female prime minister back in the fourth Doctor time. Mm-hmm. We have a captain of a ship in the fifth Doctor time who are female. And
well, and Polly's wicked smart, too.
Oh, gosh, yes. And then you also have Zoe beating up the Kraken in Mind of Evil. Mind of Evil, yes. But it's basically you have, for every time they have failed with the gender role, we're having the good old Pertwee deciding to treat the character as, oh yeah, go do something here, Joe, not realizing that she's going to unmask the Master and find out his plot, get hypnotized, or forget it. You also have very strong female characters. So in my summary with the gender roles, a lot of times you'll say that they tried. They may not have worked all the time, but they did try. And maybe the main characters were treated as sexual objects or get captured again, poor Perry. But a lot of times...
I have no sympathy for Perry.
Poor Perry. But a lot of times you have really strong background characters. You'll have the scientists. You'll have some of the people who actually helped the Doctor save the world in Inferno. You can have... Oh, Sarah Kingdom was a wonderful character. Even
Liz
back
Shaw.
In that time, yes.
Liz Shaw. Mm-hmm.
So you have, they tried a lot more than a lot of the other shows at the time. And let other people talk, because I'm sure you have other
Sherry,
things.
Sherry, I was going to say, you had a couple things you wanted to say?
Well, Sherry's got lots of notes.
Yeah. Well, I was actually going to talk about Sarah Jane. I'll still talk about Sarah Jane as an example, you know, of a great character. I'm just going to like kind of riff off of some things then, because you're right as far as, you know, some of the female companions were, you know, like really girly, and that's to be expected with third wave feminism, and then some of them were not girly, and that's okay too. I as far as the reboot, some of the things that upset me are the overt emotionalism of the character. I mean, I can't stand Rose Tyler. Sue me. And I was ready. Gillian Leach did a survey. Rose is the favorite,
and the least favorite
of all. So for people who answered the survey. And so I didn't particularly care for her. I love Donna. And I was ready for the 10th Doctor to go away as well because of, you know, his darkness. Just some riffs. Number one, Moffat is now on camera as saying, don't forget that when the Doctor first, when we first met the Doctor, he was traveling with his granddaughter. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of a hint that's going to be coming up. I think that Doctor Who does a better job of some other science fiction shows, but many of the science fiction shows, as many women will point out, you don't make a female character less feminine by making her more masculine. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, that is, you don't have to have strong female characters by having female characters who just have big guns, for example, that is, they're as violent as the male characters. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's one thing we don't have to worry too much about Doctor Who. I think it has gotten increasingly, it just does seem to have gotten a little bit more sexualized lately. Increasingly heterosexual, and I've complained about this even with respect to Captain Jack. He dabbles with Yanto. He loves Eve. He's been married. He has children. So that's like too hetero for me. And I'm a heterosexual woman, but it's like, why do you have to make excuses for having a character who is, you know, not heterosexual? So I was kind of very disappointed with that, where they went with that. And let me see, where else did I want to go? One other comment. What upset me very much was, once again, Sarah Jane, and what a great character Sarah Jane was when she first met the Third Doctor. You know, her famous line, there's nothing only about being a girl. And where with the Third Doctor, she really did take on with him as, I mean, and given her history, he was the father figure for her, you know, by being deserted by her own parents and everything. And then they became, she truly was his companion. The fourth Doctor does say, you know, this is my best friend. Have you met Sarah Jane Smith? She's my best friend. And then when they bring her back, you know, years later in the Sarah Jane Adventures, they have her she spent her entire life pining away for the Doctor. Well, you never saw that in the original, you know, series with the third and fourth. And now, you know, she comes back and she says, well, I never got married because, you know, and those particular.
Well, I think the as much as school reunion, they were trying to play the Mrs. and the X. Mm-hmm. Sarah Jane Adventures to me was much more about showing that the Doctor opened Sarah Jane's eyes to the wider world, and Sarah Jane went off and had adventures, and Sarah Jane became the Doctor. Sarah Jane became that Doctor-like figure to Maria and
Angeli. And they Luke, obeyed her as well as she obeyed him.
To me, that's the beauty of Sarah Jane, though, because she has changed over time, I think, as women have changed over time. And I'm of the age that, even though I was in grad school when I was watching Sarah Jane with fourth Doctor, then went back to third for a little bit, she was very much a role model for me, because no one in my family before had been a writer, had been a journalist, or who wanted to travel. And that's exactly what I have been able to do in my life. And that was not a role model I was finding anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Carol, I'm kind of curious, like, you know, because
I want to hear from Per Scott. I don't want to be on the gender panel that silences the man.
That's true.
Well, poor guy.
Okay. I came in sort of as a last-minute replacement here, but I'm conscious of being the dude on the panel.
Bow ties
are cool. Wow. Although I have to admit, I may be in the minority on the panel as well, that I'm a partisan of the 10th Doctor, despite being dressed up as the 11th. So I'm in the minority on that. But also, I have to agree with you. I really don't like Rose.
I love her in the first series.
I just love her in the first series.
I don't like her as a love interest. I don't like her.
Well, I'd like to say though is that the companion who has not been spoken for very much up to this point is Martha. And Martha has always been my favorite companion. I thought that she was, in a lot of ways, when I think about strong women on Doctor Who, see, this is one of the reasons why I did not like Rose. I felt like Rose, for all of her resourcefulness, was ultimately dependent on the Doctor. Mm-hmm. They often talk about her as being as that's the love story, right? The Doctor and Rose is a love story, but if it's a love story, it's a very dysfunctional love story, precisely because the Doctor wields all the power in that relationship, and Rose is pretty much bereft without him. On the other hand, Martha is, before she even meets the Doctor, completely self-actualized as a person. She's a professional, she's accomplished, and when she accompanies the Doctor, she accompanies the Doctor as I think more of an equal. And even though his relationship, even though she may love him and the love may be unrequited, nevertheless, I get much more of a sense with Martha, and even then more so, of course, Donna, who has been mentioned, of women who don't need the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Women upon whom the Doctor ultimately becomes himself dependent. Yep. Because ultimately the linchpin to Martha's era as a companion is precisely her, if I wanted to kind of put my religion scholar hat on about this too, she ultimately becomes the evangelist for the gospel of the Doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She walks the earth for a year and is constantly dismissed by both the text and fandom, but I'm like, she walked the earth for a year.
But there is one nice novel that does like cover her story there. In fact, Rob Shearman has a story in that where we're talking about it.
But go ahead, finish your point.
Yeah, finish your point.
But the one thing I'd like to say, and I don't really have a whole lot to add to what's already been said, but one thing I'd also like to note is that in terms of the sexuality of the Doctor, I think that the David Tennant Doctor does come across kind of very much as a more sexual, probably of the three new Doctors, the most sexual. And the line that hasn't been mentioned is a throwaway line at the beginning of, I think it's not Waters of Mars, but it's End of Time. Queen Elizabeth, right, that she's going to have to change her nickname.
Yes.
As a direct result of his actions. So clearly, you know, at least during that period of time when he's sort of off being the wild Doctor that we see off screen, he's indulging his sexuality in some way, shape, or form or another. And then also in the Matt Smith era, there is the
there is the implication or the constant sort of teasing of the possibility that, in fact, there is something going on behind the scenes between him and Amy. Mm-hmm. And this came up, I just happened to watch A Good Man Goes to War again the other night, and this is repeatedly the whole question of the identity of Amy's baby. Throughout that episode mm-hmm. is teased as it very well could mm-hmm. be the doctor's baby. It's only, you know, it's only really kind of in the very last reveal that it becomes clear that it's not. But it's kind of constantly brought up again, right? You know, when Madame Vastra says, "I'm trying to be delicate here," you know, yes. when was this baby conceived? And Matt Smith's doctor seems, on the one hand, to be more sexually naive, perhaps, than David Tennant's doctor. But the show is more, as I think, savvy about the sort of the possibilities that are inherent. One last thought, and then I'll be quiet, is a character that hasn't been mentioned that I think is interesting from the point of view of playing with the idea of gender mm-hmm. is Strax. Mm-hmm. I think,
oh, yeah.
I mean, Strax yes. is, he's a Sontaran, he's a warrior, he's a clone. Two genders may be a bit high for him to count. On the other hand, he also has the capacity to lactate, and volunteers his services as wet nurse to Amy and Rory at yes. one point. And so I think as a character, he's fascinating, and particularly with regard to the relationship that's being established now, sort of in the sort of the webisodes and things of the sort of the three-way relationship between Vastra, Jenny, and Strax mm-hmm. as a team. You know, there's lots to be explored there in terms of gender yes. mm-hmm. in that set of relationships. So again, I think a lot of what I would have said has already been said, and I would just sort of kind of leave it there as sort of those are some things that leap out at me as interesting dimensions of these questions of sort of gender. Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting that things have kind of changed over the few years, because one of the reasons I got very involved with the new Who, if we can actually say that, was because of Captain Jack. And that opened so many possibilities for me. And I know we've talked about, and you were mentioning some things about, you know, that it seems like he has become more narrowed maybe in the way people perceive him. But I still see him as a character of endless possibilities. And so, you know, I think without Captain Jack, we wouldn't have had, you know, like Strax. We wouldn't have maybe, you know, Jenny and Vastra up here. You wouldn't have that many different iterations up here. Carol, as a writer, and I know as a longtime fan of Doctor Who, which characters have maybe influenced you more? And in particular, I know you had a very strong Gwen in your Torchwood novel. Mm-hmm. Are there certain characters that kind of resonate with you more as a writer or as a fan?
I think, for me, I have to go back to Sarah Jane, because, mm-hmm. You know, I am of the age that I actually was living in the United Kingdom when the Who first came on, and remember the very much from the very, you know, I remember a lot of the classic Doctors, but my favorite line that I just always come back to, and I'm like you, I wanted to be a journalist because of Sarah Jane, and there's the line where she turns to the Doctor, and funnily enough, it's the episode we first see a Sontaran, and she turns to the Doctor, Time Warrior, she says, "Oh, Doctor, don't be so patronizing." And I think, to me, that redefined the whole Doctor relationship with companion, especially when the companion was a woman. Mm-hmm. And he never is, really. They joke. And I've been looking very closely at a couple episodes for another project that John and I were working on. And she mocks mercilessly through that, you know, with Pertwee and into Tom Baker. Any of her mockings, often at the expense of the Doctor. It's often at the expense of the Doctor. And for me, you know, any feminist with a sense of humor, you know, I'll kiss her too. You know, you know. And so for me, I'm not quite finished yet. And so one of the other things that I think that really influences me is knowing a lot about the production side mm-hmm. of it all. And I appreciate all of everybody's sort of love-hate for Rose. But to be honest with you, I think some of the things that changed in her character from Eccleston, I'm horrible with their numbers, so forgive me. I got to go with the actors here. From Eccleston to Tennant, which would have been nine to ten. Thank you. Were needs of publicity and PR mm-hmm. and to bring in an audience. And because they were just warming up to having this whole new series, and all of a sudden Russell is confronted with his Doctor, who he wanted to stick with, choosing to do other things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that posed some production issues that, you know, we're not and we're not privy mm-hmm. to, that, I mean, all of a sudden you've got this iconic show and you're building another iconic doctor and he's not going to be there for the next series. And so who is left? Well, you've got Jack, and you know you've got plans for Jack because Russell will tell you he had plans for Jack for Torchwood way before he had plans for the new doctor. And so he had Jack, and then you've got Rose. So you, I honestly think some of what, and I agree with you, I mean, I know somebody's taping this and I know her, so I'm not, you know, but Rose's character was not, I think that dichotomy came up partly for production reasons. Let's mm-hmm. keep our young women interested. Let's mm-hmm. make sure that people can relate, you know, that generation, and there's a lot of Roses in the United Kingdom at that time, lots of them, trying to figure out who they are and what they, you know, what they wanted to do, and they probably would never watch Doctor Who. So, and I don't know if that's just my opinion, that I think there was production values involved in mm-hmm. some of what turns us off mm-hmm. with the way Rose's character ends up really in that second, you know, after, you know, Eccleston to Tennant. Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I mean, she was a pop star, so she it yeah. was like casting yeah. Justin Bieber in a new show.
Right, people I think all in. Of that is part
but
of
I,
it.
But I genuinely loved the relationship between the Ninth Doctor and Rose because of the push-pull. Because we mm-hmm. have a character who has been the nurturing adult for both her mother and her boyfriend, who basically goes with the Doctor because he needs looking after. And the one thing she's good at is looking after people, but it... The entire first episode is really being phrased as a choice. Rose choosing to do something for herself instead of for her mother and Mickey. Which is why, ultimately, I was so disappointed that we started with this strong character who made her choices to both her leaving stories about the men in her life making her choices for her. I, to my dying day, will be incredibly angry about Rose's agency being taken away.
But I also think that's one of the reasons why Sarah Jane changes, because I agree with you completely. I watched a couple of episodes of the Sarah Jane Adventures and was just distraught, you know. So I think there might have been some production, you know, some of those issues about marketing and who was selling this Sarah Jane to and all that kind of, you know, I think that plays into it in a way that we can't forget. They want to make money on these right. on this right. franchise.
And
but
I the relationship too, with franchises too, that when you're looking at that time period when Sarah Jane came back in, a very popular and you know, being brought back in the reunion episode, but then you've got Torchwood, which is for a very different audience and a more mature audience, and it could do things that Doctor Who couldn't do. You've got mainstream Doctor Who, and then you've got what essentially became more of the children's series again, very much, you know, for CBeebies with Sarah Jane. You know, but I don't know, I want to throw in maybe a different take here. It's like the other aspects of many of the Doctor's companions, you know, like Donna gets married, she begins and she ends a bride, you know, and I have a problem with that. That's her end-all, be-all, mm-hmm. and she saved the universe, you know, mm-hmm. and this is what she ends up with.
Don't you think there's some irony in that, though, that maybe we're... I don't know. There's some irony in that she starts a bride, she ends a bride, but in between she saves
yeah,
the universe.
Yeah.
But
know,
then
I
she loses all of that character development. Like mind raping Donna upset me because
know.
She lost her sense of self-esteem. That she, I mean, her relationship with her mother, Russell had.
She
that
made
thing
it with the
mothers.
TARDIS. You know, I mean.
Yeah. but
very true.
I hated her losing her memories because it means she lost the ground she gained on her journey. And that really upset me, which is why I say Martha has the best leaving story, because Martha looks at the Doctor and says, I deserve more, and so I'm going to leave to get it.
But see,
whereas Rose settles for whatever she can get. Martha demands more.
Ten and
from
a half
relation.
Is not bad to settle with for the
Martha.
Record. Okay? if I'm
Martha
settling,
too.
I'm going there. But yeah, for me, I don't think that Sarah Jane really settled. I think she had a family on her own terms, and that's the way I kind of maybe rationalize it a bit much
well,
here.
Well,
like
her relationships with
here.
Maria and Ronnie
yeah.
are the most complex and interesting in that show, and the boys are there to do the heavy lifting, but the core relationship in the Sarah Jane Adventures is between her and her female protege.
Mm-hmm.
And with both Maria and Ronnie, Sarah Jane is who they want. They mm-hmm. learn to become assertive. They learn to, Ronnie wants to be a journalist,
right.
and Maria,
yeah.
I mean, Clyde is fantastic and I love him, but he has the freedom as a character to do a lot more interesting stuff than he would have technically on Doctor Who. I mean, Mickey has the strongest companion arc in all of Russell T. Davies' Doctor Who, and that kind of upsets me in a way, although I'm really happy given
one of the,
he was
one
introduced.
One of the things that I, and forgive me because there's a shameless plug in this too, but I have brought copies of Exodus Code for those of you who can't get them here. And,
right, exactly.
Yes. And so I'm happy to sell any copies of Exodus Code. The bookseller is going to have them outside. But, you know, to write a book that's based on a franchise, you have no idea how many people you have to go through in order to have the BBC approve. And from the very beginning, when John and I were formulating the story, we went to Russell and said, we want this to be a feminist story. And if you've not read it, I'm not going to say any more about it, but it's all about female gender, Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. It's about Gwen, and it's definitely a Captain Jack story. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, given who my co-author is, that was inevitable. But you know, I think there was never a question there that we might sideline some of those other characters in order to build, to keep Gwen out there. Because I have to say, Russell loves Gwen. I mean, that...
Gwen's the lead. Captain Jack...
That's exactly right. And he... And I also know from conversations that Russell loves Donna. Mm-hmm. Donna is one of his most favorite companions. He just thinks there's not enough middle-aged women time traveling.
Yes. Well, and I grew up with Tegan, so I was already predisposed to mouths on legs. I mean, Nyssa to me was like a blip on the radar, but Tegan was the character I fell in love with. I mean, she was, I started with the first Romana when I started watching Doctor Who. And I liked the Romanas a lot, but Tegan really struck a chord with me. And so it seemed completely logical that Donna would end up my favorite. But again, it's that push-pull. Mm-hmm. She did not let the Doctor lead her around. She was the, and you knew that if he snogged her, she would have given him such a slap.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was
well,
that
part of it is the actress, too. She's phenomenal, yeah. too. So I think that there's a part that she brought some of herself. Should we open to some questions?
I just want to say, we're down to about 5 minutes here. I know we won't have a lot of questions here, but I would like to get some of yours up here. Yes, back here.
I was just wondering, like, how you guys felt after Liz passed away, when at the end of season, I think it was series when they acknowledged... Series 6, when they acknowledged that the Brigadier had passed, and there was no acknowledgement at all that Sarah Jane's character, because the actress was gone as well, there was no acknowledgement at all.
It's a production schedule thing, and also I think, and this is coming from someone who has not yet been able to watch the final series of Sarah Jane Adventures, because then there will be no more Sarah Jane, and I can't handle that yet. I love the idea that Sarah Jane is still out there having adventures, even though we've lost Liz.
Yeah, the creators who had worked on that, I've heard them say at other conventions as well, that is exactly it, that it's not just the idea it was a children's series, but a beloved character, and that character goes on. We don't know what's happening with Sarah Jane right now, but she continues.
And also, Liz was a very, very private person. And I think there was also some production issues, but there were a lot of people very close to her who did not know it was as serious
as
it was.
Right, exactly. She has a daughter, so there, you could go watch it now. She has a daughter.
Did you just spoil the show for me?
No. You want to see her get her daughter.
Yes.
So I'd say, let me head over here. It's like, yeah. Both of you here, we'll go one in order here. How's that?
I have a friend who was really super ticked when Amelia leaves the show and they had the gravestone on it. Mm-hmm. And she's Amelia Williams instead of Amy Pond. She thought that it was like a total letdown on the whole independence of Amy Pond being Amy Pond and Rory being Rory Williams. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what you think of the whole. All of a sudden she comes Mrs. Williams.
I don't think it diminishes her. I mean, I think... When I saw it, and I did note it, that it...
I didn't pay attention.
Again, it's that thing where I don't think, for all that we call them the Pawns, and they are the Pawns, I don't think her publishing under her husband's name or legally having her husband's name diminish her as a person at all. I think that she chose to.
Yeah, for me, in some ways, it kind of harkened back to, it's always going to be for Amy, no matter what we think of her. For Amy, it was always Rory. You know, and so there's more of that connection here. So that part didn't necessarily bother me as much. And yes, I said that you'd have the next question.
I have a couple of things to say. Can we stop using the term? long-term wilderness years, please. because I want to talk a little bit about wilderness.
Oh, thank God.
First of all, I totally agree with issues that have been raised about agency and the removal of agency, which made me very angry as a fan and as a scholar. I want to just dwell a little bit on something that was said early on, I forget who said it, about Amy and Amy's, you know, quote unquote promiscuity with the doctor on the night before her wedding, and how we can accept that she's not a bad person because this is what's going on in her emotional life. I don't think we'd be having that conversation if the character in question was male, right?
Mm-hmm. So if it were like Fitz instead of Amy.
I'd like to say Amy makes choices, and some of them we may think are bad choices, but the fact that she gets to make those choices is for me very important. But
well, if the chick popped out of Rory's cake and, you know, gave him a lap dance, we'd just be like, oh, it's a stag party.
Right. So, you know, Amy's, the foregrounding of Amy's desire, her agency there, was a refreshing change after, you know, multiple companions with the 10th Doctor get relegated back into the bosom of the family. The other thing I wanted to say, though, is about Sarah Jane. And I understand when you're doing the big British audio, it's also, you know, back to the wilderness years, and in a sense, you're dealing with a very different phenomenon, even though some of the same licensing issues very clearly apply.
Yeah.
But what happened to Tegan in... I always forget the gathering, reading, whichever one it is, gathering.
Yeah.
Tegan again chose, no, I have a brain tumor, I'm dying, you will not whip me off to some many lab in the 28th century. Doctor, thank you very much, lead me to my life. That story occurred roughly the same time as the reunion, where we suddenly hear this person who I looked up to as a kind of displaced role model myself as a child. Now we hear she's been pining for the Doctor. Yeah, that really pissed me off. Mm-hmm. One other thing to say about the wilderness years, though, because the characters that we're not going to talk about now probably wouldn't have done anyway, in terms of complexity around gender roles and also sexual desire, because the two things we want to be discreet, but they're not distinct, is Fitz in the novels, who's what happens to Fitz in the course of his travels with the Doctor is his attitude to sexuality and his gender changes. But that's one thing that very distinctly happens to Fitz, that his sense of himself as a man, his uncertainty about what it's okay to feel, shifts. We watch him go through that process. I'm very happy that that was a phenomenon of the quote-unquote wilderness years.
That's good. I think we have time for one more quick question. Yes, sir?
I think the reason why it's been successful in experimenting with gender roles is that Doctor Who basically had an element of science fiction in it, so it could basically say what's outside the realm of the regular universe.
Make it want to be our universe as well, and things that, you know, we could bring into it maybe to affect that change. I think no matter which panel you're on today, to me that's one of the strengths of Doctor Who. We're coming to the end of our time here, so I know we could talk, you know, when you talk about sex in Doctor Who, 55 minutes is not nearly enough.
That's right.
You know, so I hope you will continue the conversation with us or among yourselves today. I would like to thank all the panel members here, you know, for having a very lively discussion today. So if you give them a round of applause, please.